Thank you, sir. It's great to be here, everybody, and you're getting down to the end. So you got me holding the stage before Jason comes up and finishes you off. So it's great to be here. It's my fifth year at this event. It's fantastic. Always appreciate being here, whether it's here, Austin, or Houston, where we've been over the years. And obviously, I get to talk about one of my favorite subjects, or my only favorite subject outside my family, and that's Configuration Manager. So as you, Cameron, mentioned, I worked for Microsoft for 22 years in the Configuration Manager predecessory SMS product group for a long time, and now I work for Cyrus doing, trying to get them doing more in Configuration Manager space, which you'll see coming up shortly. So look forward to that. So my agenda for our topic for our time that we have today is to talk about Configuration Manager, the newest version that Kent talked about and some others have talked about previously today. I want to dive in a little bit more detail into some of those cool new things in the product. So just a couple of sessions ago, Kent talked about how you migrate or upgrade to Configuration Manager, the new version. And what I'm hoping to do is to tell you why you might want to do that. So what are the compelling reasons why you would want to take the time and investment on migrating or upgrading your infrastructure to Configuration Manager. So I'll look at some of the key areas of updates, and I've got like a top four or five different areas there, bucket areas of updates, and then a catch-all at the end. I'll talk for a moment at the end, or towards the middle, I guess, about how you keep Configuration Manager up to date, and Kent brought that up as well in his session, so I'll give you a little bit more information on that. And then he already talked about how you get to this next release, but I got one slide in there that I'll probably gloss over because he already covered that for us on upgrading versus migration. So first things first, and again, other people today have kind of covered this for you. The official name of the product is System Center Configuration Manager. There's no more 2012, there's no 2016 or 2015. It's simply the product name is System Center Configuration Manager. So no date, no version, no product, anything else on there, just the product name, Configuration Manager. In some of the TechNet documentations and some of the blogs, you're starting to see Configuration Manager, and in parentheses, they put in current branch. Very much like, as others were mentioning, the Windows 10 philosophy for servicing, so current branch technology. So you'll see that a lot in some of the current documentation. So what this means to you guys is when you're going up on the forums and asking questions so that Kent or Jason can go ahead and help you out and answer your questions, you're gonna have to make sure that you're looking in the right spot and specifying your product version. And again, the version is Configuration Manager. Right now it's 15.11. And as Kent mentioned and I'll mention as well, that's gonna be changing in the next couple of months. It'll be Configuration Manager 16.0-something. 1602, 1603, whatever it is. As it's going to be a constantly evolving product as it keeps in that Windows 10 servicing model. So be looking forward to that. And I'll talk again a little bit about how that servicing model looks like here. So the first area, and one of the biggest reasons for Configuration Manager coming out in the time frame that it is and taking on some of its attributes that we'll talk about, is Windows 10. We needed a great platform for supporting Windows 10. So that's generally considered the number one reason why Configuration Manager is out in the time frame it is to give you great Windows 10 support. Now, there is Windows 10 support for those of you still running ConfigMan 2007. You can use it as a normal client inventory, software distribution, patching, and so on. No OS deployment. ConfigMan 2012, which I assume there's nobody in here on 2007, but if so, sorry, you need to upgrade. Or migrate, not upgrade, but you need to get off that. 2012, you've got much better support, including operating system deployment support. So you can deploy Windows 10 as an operating system using ConfigMan 2012. What you don't get natively in the product, however, is that in-place migration scenario to upgrade from Windows 7, Windows 8, Windows 8.1 to Windows 10 natively utilizing the Windows 10 upgrade technology. Now, there's a hacky way you can download some stuff in the ConfigMan product group team blog to get you task sequences, some other stuff to support that, but cool stuff coming out. So much better support in Windows 10. So let's talk about those. First off, full client capabilities. So everything you can do today with the Windows 7 client or Windows 8, 8.1, whatever your preference is, and I know nobody's running XP anymore. And Vista is still, I think, supported, but we know nobody uses that. So realistically, you're talking Windows 7 and above. All those same capabilities that you'd have. The one little caveat there is that if you're utilizing System Center Endpoint Protection, it's a separate agent that would get installed in your clients when you enable that in your infrastructure. That does not get installed on a Windows 10 device. It uses the native built-in Windows Defender. It just treats it as endpoint protection. So you use endpoint protection policies to tell it to go ahead and manage Windows Defender using Configuration Manager. But other than that, it acts just like any other clients there. Plus, we get some new things. You get software distribution support. So as an application requirement, you can state that this application deployment type only works on Windows 10, or it won't work on Windows 10. As well as the same thing in your programs for your, if you're using the legacy packages scenario. You have the ability of designating Windows 10 as a supported platform for that, or non-supported platform. So that's already there. And you do, there's a hotfix that'll get you that same capability with ConfigMan 2007 and ConfigMan 2012. We also have the ability of implementing and supporting Windows Business Store. So it's coming out now that you can have the ability of you purchasing software through the Windows Business Store and having your end users not having to go to the store and purchase that software. You've basically purchased the licenses for them and then deploy that technology out to them. Sideloading application support just means installing your own stuff from distribution points as opposed to a store. So you have that same support as well. And then later on in this presentation, I talk about mobile device support. There's some additional stuff for Windows 10 that's cool that's not there in the other technologies, being the 2007 or 2012 releases. OSD, I mentioned, you have full operating system deployment support. So all the normal methods, your refresh, your replace, your break fix, your bare metal type stuff, you can do all those that you normally would with any other OS. Plus now you have in the box or native ability to do the in-place upgrade. So create a task sequence that will provide to your down-level clients, Windows 7 and above, a WIM file that is your Windows 7 installation package, upgrade package. So that's built in, and I'll show you the task sequence. Johan showed you a little bit of that earlier, but it's a way smaller task sequence to do the in-place upgrade than a normal bare metal deployment. So I'll show you what that looks like, but built into the product now. And the in-place upgrade is Microsoft's recommended way to get from Windows 7 and later up to Windows 10. So great, great technology there. Microsoft IT's tested it out quite a bit, and they just fell in love with that method and told the product group basically they had to get it in there. And then another cool thing that's been added in here in the Configuration Manager release, some of you might have heard it called vNext. And 1511 or other names for it, but any of those type of things, and I'll probably keep saying vNext just to not confuse you too much, is the ability of looking at your current releases and implementations of Windows 10, what builds you have out there for Windows 10, as well as the ability of creating servicing plans to dictate how quickly you want to automatically deploy new versions of Windows 10 in your infrastructure. And I'll show you what that looks like just in just a couple of minutes. So you'll see that momentarily. So great, great capability in the console that will let you view all this information very, very easily and be able to track things as well as see what the lifespan is of some of those builds of Windows 10 out in your environment. So let's go take a quick little look at that. Go to full screen mode. And for those of you in the back, you might want to move forward because I'm going to be doing a lot of stuff up here, but I do have Zoom in. So just to show you, this is the current release product. So you can see the product name, Microsoft System Center Configuration Manager. There's no 2012 R2 or anything like that on it, like Kent was showing you earlier today. And the version is, the numerical version is 1511. So that's the current release that came out last month, RTM. And the build number is 8325 if you care about that. But so here's an application I have. If I just go to properties of that application and then go to deployment types, take my one deployment type I have, go to edit, go to requirements. I don't have any. I'll add a requirement. And we'll go to operating system. Oops, operating system, one above that. And now you see Windows 10 as an option here. If I expand that out, you'll see Windows 10 32-bit and 64-bit. So now I can go ahead and designate, again, Windows 10 as a requirement, a required operating system for this application deployment type, or select others and not this one, which means it can't run in that operating system. So great capability. Again, you have that in the other platforms as well. Same function and feature for the packages and program model, so I won't take the time to show you that. Here's the Windows 10 servicing node. So it's a new node that you would see inside the Software Library Workspace, and it's below Application Management, Software Updates, and Operating Systems. You have Windows 10 Servicing. And now if you zoom in over here, you'll see that this usage, it's a kind of a ring, a donut, that will show you in numerical format all the different counts of the different versions or builds of Windows 10 you have in your environment. And obviously I have in my little lab environment, I have one. So I have one, and it tells you at the bottom the legend that it's a version 1511. So the most recent build of Windows 11. And if you hover over any of these, you have multiple versions, you hover over that slice, it kind of expands out a little bit for you and gives you the tooltip as well. And then you have the rings off to the right of that. It tells you how many clients you have in the different rings there, whether they're business ready or current branch, and then long-term servicing branch. So release ready, business ready, which release ready is current branch, and then current branch for business being business ready, and then LTSB. Then next to that, you'll be told when you have systems that are nearing expiration or have expired based on, you know, Windows 10, you got basically 1 year's life of a build before you have to upgrade it to something else before you're no longer supported. It'll give you percentages on that. Then it lets you create these servicing plans. So these servicing plans, which here in the middle, are basically designating how quickly do you want to automatically deploy new versions of Windows 10 in your infrastructure, and to whom do you want to deploy those? So I've got a couple of servicing rings here, but just to show you real quickly how you create one and what the process is, I'll just do the long method. There's a shorter method, but I'll do the long one here. So I'll say Windows 10, even if it's not spelled correctly, it doesn't matter. CBB, and I'll just go ahead and click ahead. I'll pick a target collection. So who do I want this to go to? I'll say my Windows 10 pilot clients. And now I get to designate whether this is my current branch or current branch for business, and then I've got the slider bar there to designate how long before I want to go ahead and deploy this build out to members of that collection. And then all the rest of the wizard there is how quickly, not when it hit that time frame, but am I basing on local client time versus UTC time, and how long do I, after it's mandatory, before I make it mandatory, and so on. And then where the package is, and so on. So got a lot of cool things there, and I can go ahead and track those inside my dashboard. So I got that dashboard here that lets me track that information. Then lastly, down at the bottom of this area, you have your kind of like a life cycle of Windows. So in the upper left, it gives you the little legend here for current branch for business, or LTSB. It tells you what your current is and how long it has to live, or at least for the next 6 months. And in this case, it shows me that Windows 10 version 1507, as of March of this year, it's nearing end of life because it came out in July of last year, and you basically got a year. So at the end of this year's time frame, it is end of life, so it'd be in that expiring state. So this bottom stuff is dynamic information that comes from Microsoft that gets brought down to you through that updates and servicing model that Kent showed you earlier, and I'll talk about here momentarily. So that's kind of cool stuff there to let you see how you want to work with your Windows 10 environments. Now, you need to get Windows 10 out there, so you have operating system deployment. So I've got a couple of task sequences here. I've got a task sequence to do a bare metal deployment, as well as one that does the in-place upgrade. So just to show you the in-place upgrade, when you click on Create Task Sequence, there's a new option here, upgrade an operating system from an upgrade package. So this is the Windows 10 in-place upgrade scenario. So I ran through that task sequence, as well as the top one, which is install an existing image package, the traditional one you guys are familiar with, and it created these two. So here's this traditional one you guys know. Oops, I don't want to do that. I always double-click instead of going to edit. So this is the one that you're familiar with, way smaller than the one Johan showed you earlier through MDT, with all the extra steps. This is just walking through that wizard and selecting appropriate items. Now let me go back here and take this upgrade task sequence and edit it. And let me put those two side by side for you. And you can see how much shorter the upgrade process is than the bare metal deployment. So a lot fewer steps there, a lot fewer things that can go wrong. It's basically checking readiness, making sure I'm a client OS as opposed to a server OS on the target, making sure I have enough memory, enough disk space, which you can adjust those values. Then it runs through the upgrade command line, which is a built-in command line. It's pretty long and complicated, but it's built in doing that. It has a restart process step, and that's it. Now, obviously, you can add more things to it, but that's the default wizard that created that task sequence as opposed to the left, the default of install an existing image package. So a lot shorter and a lot quicker process to go through, and it still does maintain that 30-day rollback scenario for Windows 10. So kind of cool that that's there, and it makes it nice and easy for you to get Windows 10 out there. So the application support, there's ability of doing some of the MDM stuff I'll talk about in a few more minutes, and the servicing plans and your full OSD support. So a lot of nice capabilities there that you have in a Windows 10 environment. Okay, updates and servicing. So Kent brought this up earlier. Configuration Manager now is going to the Windows 10 servicing model of being updated, not necessarily on a monthly basis like Windows 10 might be, but a fairly frequent basis. So you guys are all familiar with the cumulative updates and the service pack scenarios. And as Kent was mentioning, with those, you gotta go work on a change window. You gotta go put in a change request to management and your change board to say, hey, I will need to upgrade my environment. It's a service pack, so it's gonna take me a day to upgrade the infrastructure. It's gonna take me a week to upgrade all my clients. So you gotta go through a long, complicated process for that. First, you gotta find out about it. Then you gotta download the code and get it all ready to roll. So it's a long, expensive process for you guys to go through. And the product group has heard your feedback on that, how complicated and lengthy that process is. So they've made some changes in that environment through something called the updates and servicing node. You might have heard some people call this easy setup. Easy setup was the code name for it. Making it easy for you to keep Configuration Manager up to date. So as Kent alluded to, there's two different methods. There's the online method where your site does have internet connectivity and you have a new site system role called a service connection point, which connects to the, up to the web on a daily basis to say, hey, is there anything new for me? There's also the offline mode, which my site server, my site environment does not have internet connectivity. It can't go reach out. So there's a separate tool you can run to go ahead and package all the information that you have to send up so Microsoft can figure out what will be appropriate for you, let you download all that stuff, and then inject it into your environment so that you can go ahead and install it. And I'll kind of talk about this just for a minute. If you happen to be in town tomorrow, there's a user group tomorrow in town, and I'm gonna go through in depth on this. I'm gonna show you the online and offline method of that. But anyway, what happens through either method, through the online or offline method, once you get stuff detected, your site sends up information to the site saying, here's what version I am. Basically, give me any updates available to me based on where I am. If there are any appropriate updates for you, those get downloaded automatically to your service connection point infrastructure, to your site. CAS if you have a hierarchy, or top level primary if you have secondary sites, but it'll download that automatically. It will appear in your console in a new node in the administration workspace. Kent showed you that node, and I can show you a screenshot here momentarily. You can then choose whether or not you want to install that update pack. If you do, you right-click on it, say install update pack. It walks you through a wizard, tells you whether it's going to update your site servers, your console, your clients, tells you if there's any features in there. There may be new capabilities coming down, like Jeremy mentioned, that maybe you don't want yet. Maybe your staff isn't trained yet to do ABC. So you could install the update pack to get all the hot fixes, the old cumulative update type stuff, but not enable those new features. You'll be able to detect that, and you pick and choose that. Then you'll designate whether or not you want to upgrade all your clients automatically, or whenever, however method you want to do that, or do you want to do this, what's called client piloting. Let me test out the new client build in production, but on a smaller subset of my clients, a specialized collection. So you answer those questions to this wizard, bingo, off and go, it goes and does its work. You'll track it through the console, through in-console monitoring. When it's all done, if you've turned on this auto, this client piloting thing, those clients in your designated collection get upgraded automatically. You view that in the console as well. When you're all ready to go, you basically say, I want this pre-production client to now be production. And then everybody gets upgraded through whatever your normal client deployment method is. So very, very cool, much less expensive for you in service packs and cumulative updates. It will automatically upgrade your admin console as well. on your site server, at least right now, once you get to Configuration Manager, current branch, 1511, vNext, whatever you want to call it, then it'll also upgrade remote consoles going forward. So in the next coming releases, you won't have to do anything with remote consoles. They'll just try and use their console. They'll be notified, hey, there's a new version of the console. Do you want to use it, install it right now? You say yes. It shuts down your console, upgrades the console, starts your console back up. So very, very cool. So client piloting kind of fits in that scenario. That's the scenario where you designate a collection of clients. I want to test this new client build in production, but not for everybody, just for a small subset. You don't have to create software distribution packages and programs and deployments. You just go ahead and turn on client piloting, designate your collection, bingo, they get upgraded automatically. And you view that in the console very, very easily. I can't really demo that for you because, as Kent alluded to, there's no new version of Config Manager out yet. There's no update for it. But as he did mention, there is a technical preview build that's out, and there's an update for the technical preview build. So these are screenshots I created the other day of TP4, the technical preview build 4, with the 1512 build, which is obviously later than 1511. So I'll zoom in here for you. So you can see this. So here's it's in the administration workspace. And I'm going to scroll up slowly so you don't get dizzy. And there's a new node here called Updates and Servicing under Cloud Services. If there's any updates that have been downloaded and made available to you, they'll appear in the results pane. And here you can see it says it's available. And then off to the left in the name, it says 1512. So I've got a new version or build a configuration manager I want to install. If that's good, and I like that. Now, if there were any new features to it, down at the very bottom here, I'll zoom in again, there's a new tab called Features tab, where I could click on that, it would show me support for iOS 10 or whatever it comes out. It would show me that, and I can disable those or not enable those if I don't want those new features. Okay, I say, yeah, I want to go ahead and install that. So then, I walk through the wizard. So up here on the top, there's this ribbon action, Install Update Pack. So I just choose that action. I get this wizard pops up. I walk through the wizard. It says, hey, we're going to update your server. We're going to update your console. We're going to update your clients. And by the way, there's some general fixes in here. So I say, yes, that's what I want to do. That sounds good to me. I now am asked whether I want to do all my client upgrades. You know, make the new build of the client available to everybody. Or the bottom option is I want to do the client piloting. I want to test this in production. I selected that option, give it my test collection, my pilot collection. I just did Config Man Workstations. It goes through the installation process. Now you can just here see in the admin console, it just says it's checking prerequisites. So it does do a prereq check, just like you would in what Kent showed you earlier. There's also monitoring inside the monitoring workspace. So now I am in the monitoring workspace, and there's a new node here. Site servicing status, which is what we're talking about. And then I go and I see basically the same scenario I saw in the admin console in the administration workspace. It says prereq check passed with warning. So I had two warnings, those same two SQL memory things that Kent had in his demo. But now what I can do, I got this button, oops, sorry about that. I got this button up here at the top called show status. If I click show status, then I can drill in and see the exact installation status. So you can see that it passed prereq check with warning. It started a new service, the Configuration Manager Update service. And that'll run for a few more minutes, and it's done. And it comes back, and it says it's installed. So very, very cool. The entire process took about 18 minutes to upgrade my site infrastructure and then get my clients pre-production enabled. So what that looks like is, here's my console notification. So I was in my console, I clicked on something, and it said, hey, there's a new version of the console. Would you like to upgrade it now? And I clicked OK, shut down my console, it deinstalled, it upgraded my console to the new version, brought the console back up. So I'm notified that there's a new version of the console. You don't have to use the new one. You can use the old one for a little bit, but you have impaired functionality. Not everything works properly for new stuff. So I said yes. And now here's that node Kent showed you. It's in the monitoring workspace again. There's two new nodes under client status. You have production client deployment, which I think is the one Kent showed you, and the pre-production client deployment, which is what I'm on. So here's my status, my clients with the production version, And here's my clients that are using the pre-production or testing client version. And in this case, I'm on the pre-production client deployment. It tells you the build number and it gives you the current status. It says I have one client that's in progress and I have one client that's not started. And then when I'm all done, now it can change the different color of green saying that client completed. So I go and see my client deployment status, which is an automatic deployment to your clients. I do my software distribution testing, my inventory, all the normal stuff I would do. When I'm all good, ready to roll, what I would do is I would go back to that very first slide. And once this status changes from available to installed, when it's all done, then I get this little option up here, it lights up, client update options. I run that wizard and it says, do you want to make your pre-production client your production client? And I click that option and bingo, it pulls that new client build to the regular client, and then however you upgrade your clients, like the automatic client upgrade feature, they're off and running. So very, very cool way to keep Configuration Manager up to date and running. So that is fantastic. I think you guys will really like that when you play around with it. Now, as Kent alluded to and I mentioned with these screenshots, there's a 1512 build. That 1512 build is a technical preview. You can't test that out in your lab if your lab is running 1511. The production release technical preview builds won't work on a production release, like a current branch. You have to have an insider's build, which is the technical preview 4. So what you'll have to do and what you'll likely want to be doing in your environment is you have your production environment, 1511. You want a lab that you can test things out on before you move into production. So you have a 1511 lab environment. And as Kent alluded to, you want to be on the leading edge or testing out new features. So you have another lab that's the technical preview lab. So you don't mind having three installations in Config Manager if you're doing things right. Production, testing before production, which is the same build, and then a preview release so you can see new things coming out that aren't production ready yet. And those first two will be the same as far as the build number. That third one will be completely different as far as build number. It's very, very close. You're just seeing stuff early. So you'll probably be sitting in that boat for a while, or maybe in perpetuity, because that's the way this thing's going for now. So, all right, so mobile device management. There is numerous different ways you can manage mobile devices. Steve was up here, the second session in the morning, talking about troubleshooting with standalone Intune and hybrid, as he called it, Intune scenario. When I was in Microsoft, one of the jobs I had was I was working with TAP customers. Customers would take the pre-release code and test it out in their production environments for us to give us more feedback. We would test them out internally, find things, MSIT would find things, but you guys would always find things differently because you have different environments than Microsoft does. Well, a number of my customers there, actually both my TAP customers towards the end, they both said, we're not going to touch Intune because it requires user accounts and stuff being up in the cloud. And they didn't want to have stuff up in the cloud. They wanted, I'll do it if you have everything on-premise, and we didn't have that then. Well, now, a couple different things available to you. One is hybrid MDM support. So that's what Steve was talking about. Taking Microsoft Intune and integrating it with Configuration Manager, so you have one console to manage your Macs, your Linux, your Unix, your Windows, as well as your iOS, your Android, your Windows Phone, and so on. So the Windows Intune standalone service is integrated with Configuration Manager, so you're managing mobile devices and they appear inside Config Manager. Great technology. The downside is that the cloud service gets updated on a monthly basis. So it generally gets things ahead of the integrated environment when you're integrating ConfigMan and with Microsoft Intune. So there was always a gap there before things were made available to the ConfigMan customers. And you'd have to have a Windows or Microsoft Intune extension to fix that, or you'd have to wait for a service pack or a cumulative update. For the hybrid scenario, with 1511, they have closed that gap as far as parity, so made things on par with each other at the time of the release, and then you'll have this updates and servicing feature that will go ahead and keep things up to date going forward. And one of those things was at the bottom bullet was the ability to support Windows 10 mobile devices with the hybrid MDM solution if you wanted to use that. Now, for those customers that I mentioned that didn't want to have anything to do with the cloud, with Configuration Manager, there's now an on-premises version of mobile device management. So in that scenario, I can have my mobile devices being managed through Configuration Manager without those mobile devices ever touching the web. No, not going up to the cloud at all. Now, you still do have to have a Microsoft Intune subscription, but it's for your site infrastructure. It's not for the clients. The clients aren't touching that. So the clients only talk to your on-premise infrastructure, enrollment point, enrollment proxy point to get enrolled into the environment, and then the traditional things they would talk to, a management point to get policies to upload data, and then a distribution point to get content, applications, when there might be software updates in the future, software updates, whatever it is. So the normal stuff that you would have plus the ability of enrolling your clients. So that's very cool. You just have a normal site server infrastructure. You just add in those first two site system roles. Probably add in a new management point and a new distribution point because the new mobile devices, they require HTTPS. And you may not want that for your on-premise clients, your Windows clients. So you may have set up different ones of those just for the mobile devices. Now this today in 15.11 is only supported for Windows 10 devices. Windows 10 phone, Windows 10 laptops, Surface, your tablet devices, as well as Windows 10, you know, desktops using the OMA DM agent that Steve mentioned earlier today that's built into the operating system. It will be expanded to support your iOS and your Android devices going forward. But all they would commit to for the RTM of Configuration Manager was Windows 10. And it will, again, it will expand going forward. So it's very cool. Now what you can do with this is inventory your devices. You can send down hardware inventory as well as installed applications. So I know what software is out there. Settings and certificates. So turn on the camera, turn off the camera, block this website or whatever happens to be, you know, using secured browsers, whatever. Deploying certificates down to your devices. Deploying applications. The traditional application you can deploy, as well as user-targeted MSI deployments, which you don't get with the some of the other solutions. Bulk enrollment. Bulk enrollment is very cool. So in a traditional mobile device scenario, if I'm an end user and I'm bringing my phone in, my own personal device into work, and I want to use it to get access to corporate email, it makes sense that I have to walk through the enrollment process to answer all those questions, to agree to the EULA, to agree with the privacy statements, and so on. So it's a job that I have to do because it's my device. But if this is a corporate-owned device, if I'm a company that's providing these devices to my end users, it doesn't make sense for them to have to walk through that process and maybe not do that because they're afraid of what's going to happen, and so they can't use that device to do their job. So now you can bulk enroll these devices and so the end user didn't have to do anything. So it's basically you're enrolling on behalf of that end user. Makes it nice and easy. To do that. You still have the user-initiated enrollment for those bring-your-own-device scenarios, but for the corporate-owned-device scenarios, you may want to do the bulk enrollment. And right now, again, it's Windows 10, because that's all that's supported. Okay, operating system deployment. I got 17 minutes left, so lots of cool things in OSD. It's a feature that's been out there for a long time now, since SMS 2003, and there's Service Pack for that, that brought it in there and so on. So a lot of cool things around that. A lot of new updates available to you in the new product. So driver importing and management has been a common complaint scenario. A lot of people complain for a number of years to the product group how hard it is to get drivers in, how hard it is to manage those drivers. And they're working on that, trying to make things better for you, and they've done some things that were actually implemented in ConfigMan 2012 Service Pack 2 and R2 Service Pack 1. So if you've not updated those today, you should get advantage a couple of these things on these next couple of slides. So they're backported there. But now when you import drivers, your path is displayed up in the title of your wizard instead of down in the actual path where the driver is. So the common path for all the drivers is up on top, so it's out of the way so you don't have to scroll way off to the right to find your driver in the appropriate path. So it makes it easier just to see your driver names. It's easier for you to search and filter on drivers. So maybe you want to search for a driver for a specific company. Or maybe you want to search on drivers that are only signed, or maybe you want to search on all drivers that are x86, so you can put them into your x86 boot image. Much easier for you to now to search by architecture or by name or whether they're signed or not. You get warnings when you try and import drivers that don't make sense for boot images. For example, you're trying to import some audio driver, and it's going to tell you, well, yeah, you might want this for a WIM image, but for a boot image, you don't need an audio driver in a boot image, because it's WinPE. So it'll warn you about that. It will actually block you from trying to import a driver into the wrong architecture of your boot image. So if you got an x86 driver and you're saying import this into the 64-bit boot image, it'll block you on that, saying you can't do this, you're stupid. Well, it doesn't say that, but you all know what the product group means when you see that big red warning up there, or block, so it'll block you on that. So now, the other one of the cool things they did is provide some support for what's called risky deployment management. OSD is very, very powerful. With power comes great responsibility, somebody said in the movie, but also comes great danger. You can really shoot yourself in the foot with OSD. You've heard the stories about the Australian bank and other people who have maybe lost access to email because they re-imaged their Exchange server with a Windows 7 client image. A lot of things that can happen. So a lot of times in OSD, they're called resume generating events. You can really do things that make you have to start go looking for a new job, and then not mention you were a config man administrator previously, or at least that you did OSD. So what happens now is the product will now notify you when it thinks you're doing something you might want to be aware of, and they're called risky deployments. So these are operating system deployment task sequences that you're trying to deploy as a required task sequence. So required OSD task sequence deployment. Those are deemed risky. And it's going to track some things and notify you. One is it blocks the use of almost all of your built-in collections. So it's not impossible, but from the user interface, the console, it's very, very hard for you to create a required task sequence deployment to the all systems collection because you can't see it. So right there, it saves you from hitting all systems. Now, of course, you can have your own custom collection that hits all systems, has all the same clients in there, but at least it's your own custom collection. You're not using all systems accidentally. By default, it will block you on custom collections with a member count greater than X. And by default, that X value is 100. So if you have your own custom collection that's like all systems, it would block you because you probably got more than 100 members in that collection. Because you probably don't want to do an OSD task sequence to 100 clients or a collection of more than 100 clients. It will let you do that if you want to, but it will warn you saying, hey, well, it actually blocks it, and then you have to clear checkbox, and I'll show you that momentarily. It also warns you of deployments that in your target collection have site systems in them. You probably don't want to re-image your site server computer. It also blocks you on any collections and warn you if they have server-based operating systems in the clients, as clients in that collection you're targeting. Because again, you might be deploying a Windows 10 image and you probably don't want to deploy that to your server-based OSs. Now again, if you use that check readiness task sequence step, then you'd be safe with that, but it's going to block you on those. A couple other things before we go to the next demo. Windows PE peer cache, very cool. So if you guys are familiar with branch cache, this is very much like branch cache, but it's for WinPE. So the scenario is you got a branch office with, let's say, 10 computers in it. You're going to deploy Windows 10 out to that location. You don't have a DP there. Your DP is sitting over your data center. So all 10 clients get this task sequence. They've all got to traverse your WAN from that branch office to your data center to that DP, download that Windows 10 image across the wire. So that one image goes across 10 times because you don't have a local DP. With Windows PE peer cache, what would happen is the first client that gets out there would download your image. It would then cache that image locally, and your other 9 clients, when they requested that image, they would be told to use that local client that already downloaded that image. So while they're in WinPE, they're getting an image from somebody else that's now running in a full Windows operating system configuration manager, and they get redirected to him. So very much like branch cache, but it has nothing to do with branch cache, but if you're familiar with branch cache, it's kind of the best way of thinking about it. So very, very cool thing to do. You have to turn it on as a client setting, either in the default or custom client settings, and then your task sequence you have to designate. You want to cache this stuff that you download, but very cool. Support for task sequences that have multiple reboots in them. So a lot of times you guys have been hitting issues where you have installing software updates in your task sequence, and some of those software updates require reboots. You have multiple software updates that require reboots, and they have to have individual reboots, and your task sequence gets busted after that. So now it keeps track of that for you, and it will resume on that. Support for media greater than 32 gigabytes in size. Your SMSTS log file got truncated or got shortened or reduced the number of them in the past. Now it keeps that consistency for troubleshooting from product support if you have to go that far. And an additional status audit status message lets you know when you're doing dumb stuff. Like I said, hey, yeah, let me go ahead and deploy to this collection even though it's got servers in it. You have to agree to a checkbox. When you do that, it creates a status message. It said, hey, Wally did this. So when it does blow up later on, you can track it to see who did that. So, okay, show you a couple things there. So here's my driver importing dialog. And you'll see that I specified, I already started it because it takes a couple minutes to run. And here's the path. I went to primary, C dollar stuff, and then OSD drivers. So it shows me that path up at the top of my dialog. So down in the core text where I have all my real drivers, I don't have to go through that long sequence of that path. So now I just see the path to those individual drivers and the driver names. There's a checkbox here that says hide drivers that are not storage or network based. So don't show me the video drivers, the audio drivers, and so on. Only show me network and storage. That's not selected by default. What is selected by default is hide drivers that are not signed. You can see the last column in display there says that signed, and all of them say yes. And you got the searching or filter bar here. So if I go in here, I want to see just x86 drivers. x86. And search. And all of these that you'd see here have x86 in the architecture. If I want to do something easier to see, I'll do like VMware, and you see it filters down to three of them. In this case, they have VMware in the path. Okay, so let's go back to x86. And I'll take those drivers. I'm going to go ahead and click Next. I'm going to say yes, I have to update my package. I'm going to take the 64-bit boot image. And I get to saying, hey, but yeah, I got to update my DP. So yeah, I know I have to update my DP. Oops. I must have got some that must have been some in there that were also. Oh, did I take out my filtering? Sorry. Now let's filter. Make sure I got that. And 64-bit. What am I doing wrong here? I should be picking drivers that are x86. Based. There we go. And I'm going to a 64-bit boot image, so they all support. Okay, let's do it the other way. They're all supporting 64-bit as well. I thought I had some just. Okay, so 64-bit drivers. There we go. And now I'll go to the 32-bit boot image. Update my DPs. And yeah, it doesn't work. No, it does work. I didn't select them. There you go. Okay. That would make it better, wouldn't it? It's not going to do much importing if I don't select. Hey, there we go. So here's your, as Kent had that Wally button. Here's your Wally button earlier. You dummy, you can't install a 64-bit boot image or driver into a 32-bit image. So it blocks you from that process. So there we go. That's kind of cool to help out dumbness. Now let's go ahead and take this bare metal client task sequence. Let's go ahead and deploy it. Now as soon as I click on my collections for browsing, it gives me this dialog saying, hey, this has the potential to be a risky deployment. So you may not be able to do some things that you're used to doing. So let's go ahead and click, I guess, 6-7 minutes. And now you see that I don't have all systems, I don't have all mobile devices, not that you can deploy an image there anyway, all desktop and server clients, I don't have that image either. So I don't have those collections available to me to deploy to. I got this checkbox at the top that says hide collections with a member count greater than 2, which I changed. Obviously the default is 100. So let me go ahead and clear that checkbox for you. Notice there's 3 collections now. When I select that, I now add a couple more collections in there. I'm going to go to all workstations, which has 3 members in it. So I'll take that collection. I'm going to make this a required deployment. So it's deemed risky because it's available, then it's my own fault if I do the wrong thing as an end user. Now I get this message pops up and says, this now is a high risk deployment because I went higher than my normal number of clients that I've set for. I do have server-based operating systems in the target, and I have config managed site systems in the target. So it's saying, hey, you probably don't want to do this. Now if I really think I'm smart and I know what I'm doing, I hit this checkbox down at the bottom. Oops. It says, I want to create this as a high-risk deployment, and it's going to generate an audit status message. So when I click the button or click the checkbox and click OK, it's going to create my deployment, but it's going to write an audit status message that Wally did this. So when it blows up, then they know who to tell to go JIT, update their resume. And then we already saw the Windows 10 servicing stuff available as well. So, all right, got a few more minutes. Let's go ahead and catch up with a couple more things. Now, some additional areas. Those are kind of the top bucket areas of cool things that are coming. Preferred management points. So one of the reasons that you guys have had secondary sites out there for a number of years is because you want to have a management point close to your pockets of clients. And you can't just put a management point out there and have clients use it magically and not pick some other management point because it was a random selection thing. Now, I know in R2 SP1 or one of the CUs, they added in the capability of doing that through a registry key. But now you can go in there and designate, I want my clients to use preferred management points, and those management points that are preferred are the ones that are added to the boundary groups that your clients are a member of. So now you can put MPs in the same boundary groups with your DPs, if you want to, and clients will prefer those as the MP that they utilize to communicate with. Now, preferred means I don't have to. So if I can't get to one of my preferred management points, it will fall out of those boundaries to a management point in your site, because it's more important for you to make sure your clients are managed than they're unmanaged, even if that means going across to WAN link, because you want them to be communicating and client healthy and so on. Support for Microsoft Azure, so you can put your site infrastructure on premises or up in Azure, split it any way you want to, manage clients in Azure, manage clients on premises, which you can't do today, so you have full Azure support. A combined software center and application catalog. You guys have been screaming for this for years. It's there now. It's not quite fully featured yet, but it gives you 95% of the things you want to do between the two different versions of that, that product. So now a single portal for clients to go to do all their software distribution stuff, as opposed to starting in the application catalog and then having to go to Software Center to uninstall stuff or see status of what your deployments are. Hierarchy and site scalability improvements. Primary sites can go up to 175,000 clients now as opposed to 100,000 clients, which that doesn't affect very many people at all. And your hierarchy can go up to 700,000 clients, which handles just about everybody in the world. I only know of one customer that might exceed that. But other than that, everybody else, a single hierarchy is good now. Multiple deployments for a single ADR. So in the past, an ADR had a single deployment created for it. Now it can have multiple deployments created for that as a result of that single ADR. Ability to initiate a WSUS cleanup from the console as opposed to waiting for that automated cycle to occur. And official product group support for task sequences that are not just operating system deployment based. You guys have all been doing it for years, but you've been completely unsupported in doing that. And now there is product documentation that will tell you exactly what task sequence actions are supported in task sequences outside of OSD. So you can find that up in TechNet now. Now, a few things that will be coming in the future. The ability to manage Office 365 desktop client updates. So that's pretty cool. You can use the same software update point infrastructure that you have right now for clients for normal Windows patches, but for Office 365. The difference being ConfigMan does all the heavy lifting of downloading the updates and so on from the Office CDN location instead of Microsoft Updates. It just hands them off to the Office client to do the actual installation of those updates. So pretty cool. Clusterware patch support. So the ability of designating a group of systems in a collection as a cluster and then designating the number, the percentage of those that can be shut down at a time, and even in the future potentially being able to order the specific order, I want this one to go down, then that one to go down, then that one to go down, and so on. You can also specify pre and post node drain scripts, node drain and node resume scripts. And then support for SQL Server always-on availability groups, which the rest of System Center's had for years and Config Manager never has had. So that'll be there. Hopefully those will all be there in the next release coming up this quarter or whenever it does come up. So I got a minute and a half to cruise through a couple things quickly for you. And then we will be basically done. So let me just go ahead and show you for your client stuff. So hierarchy settings, go to client upgrade. This is how, when I talked about the upgrading your clients, this is how you do the normal product client, production build clients. This is what I would do, the automatic client upgrade. And then the bottom half of the screen is your client piloting feature. So here's my piloting collection that I want to use for testing out that. But on the general tab here, I have this checkbox. Clients prefer to use the management points specified in boundary groups. So turn on the checkbox. And then all you do is go to your boundary group. So I go up to hierarchy configuration, boundary groups, go to my boundary group, go to properties, go to the references tab, and add in your management points. And in the text in the middle here, it does now say site system servers of management points, distribution points, and state migration points. And then that will filter out to your clients during the next MP lookup cycle, and they'll then switch over to using one of the preferred ones if they're available to them. So kind of cool. And last thing I have before I'll switch over and give up the stage is I can show you the new software center, I think. There it is. So this is the new software center. I don't have anything deployed in this environment, but you can see it's got a little more modern look and feel to it, but it's a combined application catalog and software center. So you'll see user targeted deployments here, as well as device targeted deployments, software updates, and operating system task sequences, and so on. About everything's here that you want to do. You can't do set your primary device like you can do in the application catalog, and there's no approval workflow in this. You still have to go to the application catalog for that, but most people don't use that because it's kind of limited. But those are a couple of those additional things that can be useful for you. I think I got like one slide left and we'll be out of here. So how to get there, Kent already covered this for you. You can do an in-place upgrade from ConfigMan 2012 SP1, SP2, R2, or R2 SP1. And I would absolutely do an in-place upgrade. It's just like you guys upgraded from 2012 to Service Pack 1, or R2 to Service Pack 1. Very, very simple, easy process. Even though Kent made it look complicated earlier today. But it's very, very simple thing to do. You have to do a lot of prep stuff to make sure you're ready to roll, but very easy to do. Migration support, you have to migrate from 2007 SP2. The R2, R3 doesn't matter, but it's the 2007 SP2. You are supported if you want to do it side by side. You can migrate from ConfigMan 2012 SP2 or 2012 R2 SP1. You can migrate from that over to 1511 or vNext if you want to. So if you want to do a side-by-side because you need a hardware replacement or you want to do the OS stuff and you don't want to do an in-place upgrade or unsupported scenarios for the OS, you can do that. And then lastly, as Kent did mention, it does require ADK10. So you do have to have the Windows 10-based ADK in order to upgrade to or install clean a configuration manager environment. So that's it. This is the latest release. It became available in December last month. So very, very recent. A nice, easy process to get there. It's going to be self-maintaining. You get approved those updates as far as getting ConfigMan up to date, but basically self-maintaining. Full Windows 10 support, lots of OSD updates, and if you guys want to be out there upgrading, testing it out, and then doing your upgrade migration to it as soon as possible. And then going forward, looking forward every few months to stay up to date. With that, I will shut up, and we'll get Jason up here to finish off our day. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Wally.